Oh, this is Patrick from the Fundamental Principle. I'm here with Jerome. Happy New Year. This is our first.
Happy New Year to you too, my friend.
Hope you had a good epiphany. Yeah, you too. One year we've been doing the podcast.
Has it really been? Wow. Okay. Cool.
How was your holidays?
Is there such thing as a bad Christmas, really?
No, definitely not.
No, there's not. I mean, there's great food and family and friends and celebration of the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, the incarnation, and the destruction of all that is evil in the world. So, you know, can't really complain. But it's been a few weeks. We've been busy with other stuff. So glad to get back in the saddle. We have a special guest with us today, Mr. Dave Riley of the Backlash Podcast. Mr. Riley, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So you've been in this space for a long time, just like I have. Would you give the listeners an introduction to you and your project and just, you know, what's Dave Riley about?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's so interesting how I got into this. I mean, I guess I first was like politically active, if you will, at Occupy, right? Like Occupy Wall Street was kind of the first time that I woke up and I realized that there was something like deeply, deeply wrong with America, with what was going on with the money, the whole college scam stuff. And so that was kind of like the introduction to like political activism. You know, obviously that was a communist thing. And you wind up getting indoctrinated with a lot of crazy stuff. Like this whole concept of, you know, racism and all of this. So I was a leftist. This is back in like 2010, 2011. And I remember very distinctly one time I was in Roxbury Crossing, Boston, and a black guy threw a brick at me while I was riding on my bicycle. And I was like, hey, you know, he shouted at me. He said, get out of my neighborhood, cracker. And I thought to myself, you know, that seems kind of racist. But wait, black people can't be racist. Only white people can be. And that basically broke my brain. That was in like 2011. And I realized that everything that I've been taught by public schools, college, the social, you know, surroundings was a lie. And that was, you know, the first thing that kind of kicked me off on this political journey, coming to, you know, arriving where I am now. Along the way, I converted to Catholicism. And, you know, Donald Trump ran for office back in 2015, 2016. And, you know, I hate to say it, but it's true. I'd never really thought about the racial component or makeup or nature of our country, of our nation. And it wasn't until I heard the, you know, Donald Trump speech, you know, they're sending rapists, they're sending drug dealers, and I guess some of them are okay, you know. And that was the first time that I realized how deeply and profoundly immigration has an effect on the country. And so that kind of, you know, led me along. And so I had just converted from atheism to traditional Catholicism. And along with that conversion was a movement from, you know, left-wing politics to extreme right-wing politics, I guess you could say. Although it's not really extreme, right? Living in harmony with the natural order, with the natural law. Men can't be women. Women can't be men.
Same people.
Yeah, exactly. I came to sanity, otherwise known as right-wing extremism. and so, yeah, I wound up getting a radio show. My parents owned a network of radio stations in Pennsylvania. Started doing some interviews, produced a series, an award-winning series on the drug crisis, the opiate crisis specifically. And that kind of led up to what happened at Charlottesville, where I lost my job. I had to resign. The radio station got boycotted because we did an interview with Jason Kessler. And I was down there filming it for, you know, as media. But I got canceled for that. I went on to work for E. Michael Jones after that at Culture Wars Magazine, Fidelity Press. I was there, I want to say like 2018 to 2021, during the publishing of Logos Rising and the second edition of the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. And then eventually the two of us kind of didn't see eye to eye anymore. Plus COVID happened and I had to move. I got married, my wife got pregnant, and they wouldn't do in-person prenatal care because of COVID, which was absolutely insane. So I wound up moving here to North Idaho, where I now have three kids. I spent some time doing some political activism. I ran for school board in 2021 and I ran for governor in 2022. Spent some time working with the local Republican Party. Now I'm focused mostly on this podcast that we're doing, The Backlash, with Rebecca Hargraves and Cameron McGregor, and building a local network, building relationships, businesses, and things that can be used to sustain our community up here in the Pacific Northwest, specifically here in Kootenai County, so that, you know, when it comes time for my kids to grow of age, we'll have something to pass on to them. I don't know if that's a little bit of a long story, but there's a lot of ground there.
So you're quite the white boy.
Yes. Yeah. According to E. Michael Jones, absolutely. He says I'm doing some sort of heresy called white Catholicism, where basically it's just like, we're white. Like, we're white people. I'm not
so
like
Catholicism. Yeah. I mean, I love E. Michael Jones. I've profited greatly from his work. The Slaughter of Cities if I had to name one book that made me the urbanist I am today, that would be it. Mm. But Doc, I say this with all love and charity in my heart. White people are the only people who actually practice what the church teaches. like white people are the only Catholics. Like, go to mass and see who is actually at the traditional mass. It's whiter than a Klan rally.
True. It's true.
Right. And you know, there's all these stats from Pew that you know, Novus Ordo Revolution has failed. Like, eight for every person that leaves or enters the church from Novus Ordo at RCIA, like, eight people leave. You know, most people don't believe in the real presence. Most everybody contracepts. Like, it's an absolute disaster. And it doesn't work, and the people don't actually believe it.
I saw a video recently of the Archbishop of, is it Portland? Archbishop Sample.
Yes.
And he, I think this was on Christmas Eve or perhaps just before the circumcision, he gave a little speech talking about how they're going to be starting a new catechism program for confirmations, because according to their own statistics in the Diocese of Portland, 85% of people that are confirmed in the Novus Ordo Church leave. That is such a
five
failure.
Out of six.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
We're the worst time in church history.
Like, and if you don't, the reason for this show, we talked about it before we started recording, but it's worth repeating. Like, all of my friends with good politics, which is to say racially aware, Jewish aware, aware of women and honest about the necessity of illiberalism, i.e. fascists, most of them have terrible religious takes. And all the people I know who have good religious takes, which is to say traditional Catholicism, you know, ethno, like based, almost everybody else has, their politics are terrible. And only a real, like, synthesis of the two, right? Because they're both answering the same question. How shall we live? Right? That's the question of politics. That's the question of religion. Mm-hmm. And you can't have a liberal religion and illiberal politics, just like you can't have a liberal politics and an illiberal religion. They're going to conflict.
Yeah.
You have to be consistent across both domains. And it's vitally important that the people who understand the religious question understand the politics, because going to mass shouldn't be a political act, but necessarily it is, because you're saying, I'm in fellowship with all these people. Like, well, are you really? Like, if you go to mass in Portland, which you and I did last month or 2 months ago, mm-hmm. right? And you don't go to the Society of St. Pius X or a Latin mass or whatever, and you're saying, I'm in communion with all these people by going to mass with them, and you're obviously not, because 85% of them don't actually believe in Catholicism, right?
Like, right.
So, like, are they gonna, are, when you say, like, I don't, you know, like, as a sane person would, right? This situation in Portland, Oregon is intolerable. We're ruled by, like, East Anglia phenotype women that are lesbians and communists, and there are insane people in the street doing drugs and threatening random passersby. You can't go to the, you know, famous bookstore down in downtown Portland, Powell's, without being accosted by a crazy person on drugs.
Or how many priests are in Chicago or across the nation are hiding illegals, or, you know, sacrificing their space for Catholics for these random illegals that shouldn't be here in the first place. They're breaking, you know, federal law or federal mandate to get these people out.
Where's the solidarity of, you know, like, you want to talk about, like, solidarity with the poor? What about, like, the poor working class person who's been thrown out of a job by illegals?
Right. Yeah, there's a fundamental disconnect. There's a fundamental disconnect between the USCCB, most of the bishops in America, and the people, like the Catholic people of America. And, you know, I talk about this with my dad all the time, because my dad was, you know, he was born in 1952. There was no Novus Ordo Mass. There was no Novus Ordo Doctrine. There was no Vatican II. And, you know, to speak figuratively, to speak foolishly about these things, the church failed him. The church failed him. And it failed me. And it failed millions of Americans. Not to say that the church has failed, or that the church has collapsed, or that the promises that the gates of hell shall not prevail have been broken. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that the church has failed us culturally, at the very least, if not politically, by doing this, by, you know, changing to go along with the world, to get along with liberal democracy, with this post-war consensus that has emerged and hopefully is collapsing. And, you know, they tried to go on, to go along with the world, and they left everybody behind. They fed them rocks instead of bread. And people left, like my dad. My dad left because he was born into a church that self-identified, if you will, as the teacher of teachers, as the teaching church.
Mater et magistra, yeah, like the mother and teacher of all human beings.
Yes, the deposit of faith, the guardian of truth. And all of a sudden, in 1972, you're being hit from the pulpit saying, well, you know, we're not really a teaching church. We're a pilgrim church. We don't have the truth. We're all holding hands together, journeying through this human experience towards the truth, maybe. And that was a failure, an absolute failure. And right, it's bizarre to me to see people that can't admit that. I don't understand.
Right. Well, and to the extent that they do acknowledge it, if you say this is like the worst crisis since the Aryan crisis, right? Like, are all the people who were like went with Athanasius into the desert, are they all schismatics or are they saints? Right? If you go to Bishop Williamson's mass, you're a schismatic. Really, Dr. Jones, for believing what every Catholic believed until like yesterday? Mm-hmm. I'm the schismatic.
Right.
I'm the person that needs to be corrected. I'm the one who needs to be harassed. Not the communist beaner who's trying to turn America into a communist shithole and bring 100 million of his co-ethnics into this country and turn it into a, you know, a failed state.
Or Pope Leo, when he just says that we need to change the culture before we change the church law.
Yeah, like, or Francis, when he says that things like, who am I to judge? Well, actually, Holy Father, that's your job. Right? Kind of your job. Like that's kind of in the job description is to be the guy in charge of things. And it's very, you know, like the new Archbishop of New York from Joliet, Illinois. That dude is gayer than two dudes kissing. Right? I mean, when you make your announcement of like, I'm happy to be here in New York, and like, And you're like, I love the food and the Broadway shows. And like, what? What heterosexual band is like the restaurants and the Broadway shows are going to be fabulous? this is not the teacher and father of all priests. You know? Guys, let's go see Cats. I got everyone for the retreat this year. I got everyone tickets to see Hamilton. What are you talking about? You know, like this is not what the people of New York City need. You know, right. they're being ground down by third world level Gini, you know, of course, coefficients of between the rich and the poor. They're being ethnically replaced. They're being taxed at ridiculous levels to be, you know, given to other people, racial strangers. They have, you know, a crisis in church education. They're not safe. What exactly, you know, Your Excellency, are you going to do for all those actual real practical problems? Like, can anyone imagine any bishop in like the kingdom of St. Louis the Ninth or King St. Louis the Ninth, like just having random Moors like show up off the shore of Marseille, randomly like kill a bunch of French people, and him being like, oh, I guess that's just part and parcel of living in the Mediterranean. Or would he be like, no, we're just going to kill everybody that's a Moor that's in France. Like, if you're a Moor and you show up in France with the sword, we're just going to kill you. Right. Why is, you know, Venezuelan face tattoo guys like, oh, they're just part of our community. They're our neighbors. No, they're not. They're foreign gangsters who are here to like rape, rob, and kill Americans. Like,
it's true.
And they're not really that Catholic. You know, the last show we published was with my friend Jose Nino, who's from Venezuela, talking about how most Latin American countries aren't very Catholic. It's a mile wide and an inch deep because they are very syncretic and very poorly educated on the faith, and they don't really understand how this whole thing works.
And that's to say nothing of the embrace of the South American bishops of liberation theology, which is essentially right. Communist doctrine masquerading as Catholicism.
Right. Yeah. Well, and both Francis and Leo are effectively like South American white guys.
Right.
And who believe in communist nonsense.
It's like, right.
Well,
I saw a tweet from Leo a couple weeks ago, and I commented on it on Twitter, or X, or whatever you want to call it. I'm still never going to call it X. It's Twitter. It's been too long. It's too ingrained. But I saw a tweet from Pope Leo talking about human fraternity and how we need to like get along with all these other religions and seek fraternity with one another and human brotherhood. And it's like, you know, am I the crazy one here? You know, I read the Alta Vendita. I found it convincing. And then I look at what's happening in Rome. Yeah. And I'm like, well, it sure looks like they did what they set out to do. It looks like they infiltrated the church and made popes Freemasons without them even knowing it.
It sounds like it. And, you know, Venezuela has been in the news of late. George Washington was a Freemasonic liberal guy who was resentful of being treated like a wog from the colonies by British people. And if they just created him Baron of Cumberland or Duke of Cumberland or whatever, the American Revolution wouldn't have happened. Simon Bolivar was a liberal white guy who resented being treated like a wog from the colonies by the Spanish elite, and so he rebelled. Like, it's just Freemasonic liberal elites in North and South America both who made the revolution happen. And you know, like, where in South America functions. Where in South America is like, oh, this place is exploding with the faith and it's prosperous and the streets are clean and people are healthy and, you know, they get married and they stay married and they have, you know, they have 5, 6, 7 kids the way Catholics used to. And they, like, nowhere.
Well, I mean, apparently the German parts of Brazil, the white parts of Brazil and Uruguay are it.
Yeah, well, yeah, and like in the part of the white parts of Argentina, right? Like this is, and you know, to the extent that you know, traditional Catholicism in South America, Bishop Galeeta, you know, despite being from Argentina and with the society, is 100% white. Bishop right. De Castro Maier was German, like mm-hmm. just because he was in Brazil. Like there's Germans in Brazil. He's a white guy, or it was, God rest his soul. Like, you know, so of the bishops that actually preserved the faith in South America, right? They're all white.
Yep. But and you know, that's, I was going to say that story plays out even in the, if you get like really into the history, and it's been a while since I've been down there, but I spent some time in Ecuador, spent several months in Ecuador, in Quito, in the historic city center, which it's interesting because it's actually like the oldest European city center in existence. And it's in South America in Ecuador because
it didn't get bombed in the Second World War, the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah, it didn't get the, you know, the living shit blown out of it. Yes. And so it's interesting to be able to be there and to feel the vibe that it produces, the culture that it produces. But even in the convent that Mother Mariana de Jesus was, which is, she was the nun that saw Our Lady of Good Success of the Purification. And even in that convent, there were like racial wars between the white nuns that came from Spain and the mixed race nuns that were the product of, you know, intermarriage in the colony. So it's, yeah, you know, just like being Catholic doesn't fix that, you know, and it's just fundamentally dishonest to pretend like it does. I don't know.
It is. Well, and to the extent that like non-whites, I mean, there are non-white saints, there are non-white Catholics, they're drafting off the patrimony of Europe. So like, white Catholicism, quote unquote, is just Catholicism, right? That's, you know, like the African bishops are like, yeah, we don't like the gays, but we want polygamy. Like, what? hold on. Like, this, did you read the Bible there? Like, show me one time where polygamy like works out in the Bible. It doesn't. Like it's kind of God's subtle warning, like this is not a good idea. But and you know, in South America, right? Because I mean, you could look at, go to Wikipedia and look up the president of Venezuela and do the list of the presidents of Venezuela. Basically, up until the 20th century, or even Chavez, right? Like they were like white aristocrats, then they were like white middle class people, or white peasants. You could see it in their faces. And then all of a sudden, like, Chavez is like this Indian dude.
Right.
And Maduro's like this Indian dude. And they're communists. So they're communists because their communities are poor because they're not as capable as the white Venezuelans. And they're right. Poor.
Right. No, I mean, it's true. And, it's undeniable. It's like undeniable. And furthermore, there's like, you know, and I think that a lot of Catholics are oblivious to this. You know, we've got so many other problems, and you know, between the liturgy, between the doctrine, between, you know, the actual scandals of things that happen within the diocese. You know, nobody is going up and like deeply reading about like the curse of Ham or what the Catholic Church says about that. There is one guy. There is one guy. American Reform, yes. He's awesome.
You guys need to have him on the Backlash. We've had him on this program.
Yeah, we did a stream with Stephen Cox. I think it was on like Christmas Eve or somewhere around then. It was a good discussion. But who is it that will dwell in the tents of Shem? It's Japheth. And who are the Europeans but the descendants of Japheth? Hello.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that hasn't changed.
Well, again, like, you're in North Idaho. I'm proximate to that area. That's all I'll say. The reason the upper, you know, the upper mountain west of Western Montana, the old Butler Plant area of Eastern Washington, like North Idaho, and Western Montana is so nice, is it's full of like individualistic white people. Mm-hmm. Like that's why it's nice. there's no other reason why that is. It's the most based place in the country because of the, you know, libertarian idea, the basically anarcho-capitalist ideas of the people who live there, and the fact that most Catholics who actually live there, from Spokane to say Missoula, like the question isn't like, what does Pope Leo think, but it's rather like Bishop Bravanus or Bishop Valet, right? There's a set of conscience and other traditionalists, and that's why those places are a nice place to live.
Yeah, no, it's
and the fact that it's the weather's bad enough in the winter that certain populations stay out.
True, that's also true. But yeah, I mean, even the Bishop of Spokane is pretty good. A couple weeks ago, I got word that he held on. Was it All Saints? He held a pontifical solemn high orchestral mass. And it was like not heavily publicized, but it was the Latin 1962 Missal. And it was packed, invite only. And it was packed, like bursting at the seams with people that came out for this. And so, you know, our bishop, I mean, there's a big part of me that I really wish that we could somehow chop the Diocese of Idaho into two and either get our own bishop here in Coeur d'Alene or somehow piggyback off of Spokane, because Bishop Christensen in Southern Idaho, he's in bed with Catholic Charities, the Liberals, IACI, all of these, you know, liberal groups. And he almost never visits us up here. Well, you know?
Yeah. It's a trick of the geography. The transverse mountains across Idaho we basically make like North Idaho is Catholic and Libertarian. Southern Idaho is basically North Utah. You know, everywhere else, North Idaho, Missoula, they're all Spokane focused.
Yep.
If you're going to go to town or go see a show or whatever, like you go to Spokane. That's, you know, we don't go to Boise. Like,
no. It's such a drag too. It's like an 8-hour drive.
It's awful.
Want to go to the legislature and bitch about some law. It's like a 3-day commitment, a day to drive, a day to bitch, and a day to drive back, you know?
Yeah. Well, but that would be like real sane federalism, and we can't deal with that in America. Speaking of North Idaho, cause this came up, you were involved in a rosary rally protesting. Was it the homos and the cross-dressers reading to kids? I can't remember exactly the circumstances.
Yeah, so here in North Idaho, there is a very, very small group of freaks that are very interested in pushing the LGBT agenda. It's like the owners of Clark's Jewelry Store on Sherman Avenue, a couple of people from Heritage Health, which is this like, you know, mental health, abortion, you know, elder care type of thing. And then, of course, the publisher of the newspaper, the Coeur d'Alene Press, his name is Clint Schroeder. He's a gay guy. And so, like, this group of maybe like 20 people are very committed to pushing LGBT ideology here in Coeur d'Alene. And they put together something called Pride in the Park. And I think they tried it a couple times in like 2015 and 16, and it was a flop. Then COVID happened and it all got canceled. But they came back with a vengeance in 2022. And I think I was the only person that actually visited their website and saw that the event was officially sponsored by the Satanic Temple of Idaho and like the United Methodist Church. Like they're like literally side by side on the sponsors page.
Well, and so Mark, I'll be honest about both.
And so I wrote a couple of articles about how ridiculous this was. And it blew up and it went totally viral. Libs of TikTok picked it up, and Tucker Carlson back when he was on Fox, they all started talking about this thing, and it became a real shit show. It was like Charlottesville 2.0. I could feel it brewing. You know, the local motorcycle militia up here showed up at a legislative town hall, and they said that they were going to go out and, you know, kick their asses, basically, like, you know, if anybody comes up here with, you know, any of this gay stuff, we're gonna meet them with violence. Literally said that on camera, on live stream at a local event. You know, Vice News was coming around, all of the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, they were all sniffing around, and you could tell that it was about to blow up into this huge thing, right? And everybody was rightfully pissed about it, and they wanted to do something to protest it. And having been at Charlottesville, I'm like, you know, guys, we're walking into a trap. You know, the mayor's a libtard. The Coeur d'Alene police are all in bed with Antifa and the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL. And so I was kind of skeptical of the whole thing. And then one day, a couple of weeks before Pride in the Park happened, a bunch of flyers started showing up at every Catholic church in the county, saying that there was going to be a rosary rally in downtown Coeur d'Alene and that we were going to, you know, say the rosary and march straight through the Pride event. And my priest got up that Sunday and held up the flyer in front of everybody and said that Antifa had put out fake flyers, or perhaps he said it was Satanists had put up fake flyers. There is no rosary rally. There is no counter protest. Please stay home. Don't do anything, blah, blah, blah. And so I did some asking around and I found that a very, very good, but young 19-year-old kid from one of the churches in the area had decided to make the flyer on his own and go out to all the Catholic churches and hang the flyers up without speaking with any of the priests, which had led to a lot of confusion. And so, because my reputation is already absolutely trash, excuse me, because most people, you know, you either love me or you hate me. And so it's pretty low risk for me. I then went around to all the churches and said, no, this is my rosary rally. I'm taking it over. We're not going to march through the Pride event. We're going to go to the other side of the park. We're going to pray the rosary. We're going to stay away from these people. We're not going to have any confrontation. And I was able to get all of the churches to kind of back off and to also host their own holy hour at the same time. So for anybody that didn't want to go downtown or be anywhere near these, can I say the F word on this podcast? Yeah. For the people that didn't want to be around these faggots, they could just go and do a holy hour at their churches. So we were able to get that and some clarifications that, you know, some emails went out. No, this wasn't Satanist. This was like some overzealous kids. But if you want to go, you know, you can contact Dave. So anyway, so that was going on. And as that was happening, this local Zionist church up here, Candlelight Christian Fellowship, they have a private kind of semi-public group chat. They were going around saying that the Rosary Rally was being coordinated by feds. And then when they found out that I was the one coordinating the Rosary Rally, they were calling me a fed. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not a fed. This is not a fed operation. We're going to pray the rosary to try to beg God for some grace to get these freaks out of our community. No. And if I see any of the people from my side going to have a confrontation, I will step in, and if I like need to call the sheriff or something, I'll do that. Well, that interaction got clipped and cut by a bunch of very dishonest people. I won't say their names. You know, I want to keep the peace. But one group was Zionist. The other group was pagan. And then all of a sudden, you know, so we have our rally. We have our we prayed 15 decades of the rosary the correct way. We did the consecration to the Sacred Heart and the act of reparation to the Sacred Heart. And we did all that in the park. And it went fine. I talked to the sheriff. He signed off on the whole thing. Everybody was happy. The priests at the churches were happy. The sheriff was happy. Nobody got in any fights. Nobody got in any confrontation. The situation was diffused. Everybody went out. We went and got schnitzel after at the local German beer house. It was good. Then as we were wrapping up our lunch, my wife called me and said, hey, Dave, there's a U-Haul truck with like a bunch of people wearing masks. And the cops are pointing their guns at him. Do you want me to like swing around and try to get some video for you? I'm like, yeah, what's going on? Come to find out, Patriot Front had showed up in this U-Haul truck and they were arrested on their way to go exercise their First Amendment right to protest. Came completely out of the blue. Nobody had any inkling of any idea that these guys were going to be coming up. And it caused quite a scuffle. For those that, you know, didn't see the news stories leading up to Pride about how the Satanists were sponsoring the event, everybody saw that Patriot Front had got arrested. And immediately, all of these people took this screenshot of me saying that if I see any of my people going to have a confrontation with the faggots, I will, you know, I will intervene. I will stop that. They all took that out of context to paint it as though I had called the police on Patriot Front. And that is categorically false. Nobody even had any clue that they were coming up. And it later came out in court that the person that did call the police was a private military contractor that worked for the Marriott Corporation, which is like very sus. The Marriott Corporation has a lot of ties to the CIA. They have an interest here in Coeur d'Alene. They're building a giant, like 25-story hotel downtown. So they've got spooks all over the place, and they do all kinds of things to lower property value before they close on a deal, or, you know, because they're building a new hotel, you know, they want the local resort to financially suffer. So I think that there are certain interests up here that were pushing for this story to go out to kind of negatively impact the tourism industry here, if that makes any level of sense. But, you know, it was a really interesting experience because, you know, being one of the only independent, you know, journalist types in the area, me and my buddy Casey Whalen, we attended the Patriot Front trials and we were in touch with all the lawyers and eventually in touch with, you know, some of the people from Patriot Front themselves. We've actually got Thomas Rousseau coming on my podcast this Monday. We'll be talking with him.
Thomas is a good man.
Yeah. Good man. I don't really have any issues with him or his org. I mean, his organization is not for me. I don't really like being on lists or, you know, doing that kind of thing. That's just not my bag. But if it's yours, go ahead. You know, if you know the risks of organized activism and that's what you want to do, go for it. Patriot Front has been around for a long time. They've got a track record. And
well, it comes down to something quite simple. Either racially organized political advocacy is okay for everybody, or it's okay for nobody. And for many, 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 many years, I've been in this thing for 20 years now. For the first like 15, white self-advocacy was considered like the worst thing in the history of the world. And Patriot Front saying, look, like BLM can be in the street complaining that black people don't get enough. And when I, as a white person, say, hey, these black people are saying that they get to steal from me as a matter of like justice. I object as a white person because they're saying we want to steal from white people, like Zora Mondami just did.
Right.
From Christian people, like the Muslims would say, or whatever. Like, everyone in the world organizes against the interests of normal, straight, white people, especially white Christians in America.
Yep.
And Patriot Front is standing up for people, you know, for the actual Americans.
Yeah.
Who say, enough is enough. This is ridiculous. And, you know.
Plus their disaster relief stuff that they do. I don't know if you saw the videos of them.
Yeah, you know, like I've talked to them about that. And I know some guys locally that are involved in NPF, and I like every one of them that I've met. And it's ridiculous and absurd. Like, okay, so the state apparatus is large L liberal, anti-white, anti-male, anti-Christian, and will not let me organize on my behalf and will not stand up for me because of those identities.
Yeah.
Right. So when groups of white men get together and act solidaristically amongst each other, well, groups of solidaristic white men are the thing that drove history for like the last 1,000 years. Sorry, Africans, like, you know, 300 Dutch guys deciding, like, let's get on a boat and go to Africa. It's more important for the history of Africa than everything every African had done ever for the history of Africa. Sorry, that's just the truth. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's yep. just not.
Well, and so we're talking about a white organization. I'd like to hear kind of your conversion story and your experience with Charlottesville. I think we're heading into a hard time, so I think that would be beneficial for the audience to hear how your faith intertwined with that.
Sure. Well, I'll just to put a pin in on the Patriot Front thing. At the time, you know, the narrative that happened with Patriot Front was awful, right? You know, it became everybody in Coeur d'Alene is a neo-Nazi, white supremacist, blah, blah, blah. It gave the liberals a lot of wind in their sails. Be a lot cooler if they were, yeah. But it put a lot of wind in the liberal sails. They were able to do a lot of fundraising about it. But through the trial, a lot of good actually came out of Patriot Front's actions because it exposed the inner workings of the local FBI field office, the local DOJ, the Coeur d'Alene City Prosecutor's Office, the Coeur d'Alene Police. All got exposed thanks to Patriot Front. And the people of North Idaho are deeply in their debt for that, actually. And normal people up here like Patriot Front. When you mention about this group that came up here to a normal person, they'll be like, oh, you mean the guys that came out and protested the fags? Love them, you know? And we wound up finding out that the local FBI, DOJ, and police conspired with one another to illegally arrest them, steal their phones, hack into them, disseminate the information to groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it was all completely illegal. The Coeur d'Alene City prosecutor that presided over this whole thing, Wes Summerton, wound up getting charged with prosecutorial misconduct and Youngblood and Brady violations. He lost his job a month after the trial was over. So
do you know, listeners, do you know how bad you have to screw up as a prosecutor in Zog, America, to get in trouble for attacking neo-Nazis? Like, just let that sit for just a second. This guy was so wrong and so bad that he got in trouble in Joe Biden's America for attacking a quote-unquote neo-Nazi white supremacist group.
Yep.
That's how badly this guy did his job. This is how anti-white and just lawless this man was.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yes. They had to fire the senior supervisory resident agent of our local Coeur d'Alene police, field office. His name was Zach Schofstall, white guy, good guy, from what I understand. I had one conversation with him. He had no idea who I was. I called him kind of covertly. I got his number from his lawyer, actually, because I found out that he has a very strong case against the FBI for discriminating against him, because the local prosecutor, her name is escaping me right now, actually. Dang it. Tracy Whalen, that's her name. So this is the DOJ assistant U.S. attorney in charge of the field office here in North Idaho. Her child is trans and was at the Pride in the Park event as a performer. And she was a witness to the arrest of Patriot Front. She legally should have recused herself from the whole thing. But instead of doing that, she tried to put pressure on the local FBI office to give an affidavit of probable cause to seize their phones and hack into them. When Zach Schofstall said, "I see no evidence that these people crossed state lines to commit any crime whatsoever," she got on the horn with the FBI and had him replaced with a lesbian from Boise who did sign off on this fraudulent warrant that was never produced in court, by the way. And so all of that came to light because of what happened up here in 2022. And so for anybody that's in Patriot Front that's listening to this, I'm deeply in your debt. And everybody that I met as a result of the trial, like we had a little party after when they were acquitted. And they were let off the hook. We, you know, bought some beer, had the guys over. We got to chat. I like every one of them. There isn't a single person that I've ever met in Patriot Front that I don't like. So I just want to put that out there. So that kind of puts a pin in on the Coeur d'Alene thing. Sorry for being long-winded. I apologize. Well,
no, this is important. This is very, very, very important, because that woman who has, quote-unquote, has a trans child is a sociopath who is abusing her children and giving them Munchausen by proxy. There is no such thing as trans children. There are psychopathic mothers who abuse their children into becoming, into mutilating themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. The lesbian who got in Minnesota. The pervertocracy that we live under. These people cannot be allowed to have power. That because they will, there is no such thing as a pervert, whether that's the person who transes their children or engages in same-sex sodomitical acts of either sex. They will always, always side against Christian civilization, because Christian civilization tells them to stop that. And whether they're bishops or prosecutors, They're not people we should listen to or to respect. Like this is like the reason for this show is that the average person who goes to the TLM and just wants to get to heaven and pardon me, says their rosary, right? You need to understand, dear listener, these people hate you and want you to die. Mm-hmm. That woman who transed her child, she can never admit she was wrong. These women who, these middle-aged millennial women who experimented with bisexuality in college and did a lot of drugs, they will be the last people to admit that this was a mistake. Because if they do, they have to face how terrible a person they are. And they will never, ever do that. And the existence of Patriot Front is like a cross to a vampire for these people, and they have to destroy it because it, these patriarchal, in shape, patriotic, pro-social young men, their mere existence is a rebuke to them that they can't stand. Mm. They know those guys, like, oh, hey, like, here's a group of disciplined, organized, in-shape young men. The movers of history. anything that's ever been done has been done by a group of guys that look like Patriot Front. Whether it was the Crusades or the Waffen-SS, it's a bunch of guys who look like Patriot Front. Young, solidaristic, in shape, white. And their existence, and to the point about the FBI, they know that North Idaho is full of like gun nut libertarians and traditional Catholics. And so like every single white person is a potential member of Patriot Front, unless you're married to a non-white, you're a pervert,
yeah,
or you're Jewish, or you're like, or you're passing as white.
Right.
And so who gets empowered by our system? People who are effectively traitors. And all the normal people who just want to, you know, drink beer, go on Lake Coeur d'Alene, you know, go to work, raise their chickens and shoot their guns. They have no political understanding of like, no, you have to organize. You can't just live and let live with these people.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And
it is that potentiality that causes the FBI to freak out and be like, we have to monitor everybody in North Idaho because, like, if they go to the set of a conscious church, they're already, like, out of the system, or they're, you know, libertarian gun nuts. They're already out of the system. We have to watch these people and we can't trust them. Okay? Right? Like, this, you said it, not me. You are the one who set yourself system. You're the one who said, I hate normal people. Okay, I just believe you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's and it's funny too. You know, we've got a lot of people, a lot of really good people at our parish that keep an eye out. A lot of former, like there's one guy in particular that I'm thinking of. He's a former homicide detective from LAPD, moved up here. He's more of a set A, but he goes to my parish, and he's constantly on the lookout, and I love having him around because he's like, whenever I have like a group meeting or a meetup or whatever, he's always looking for where's the Fed. You know what I mean? He's always keeping an eye out, quizzing people, figuring out where they're coming from, because he loves the church and he loves the people there, and he doesn't want to see the FBI like entrap or do anything goofy to somebody at our church. So yeah, it's it's wild, the antagonism that's there between the Catholic community and the state, really. And we saw that come out, by the way, with this House Judiciary report that came out last year, maybe in the summertime. I don't know if you guys saw.
Oh, but yeah.
There was this whole report about radical traditional Catholicism and the fact that it poses a threat to society, a threat to the system, a threat to, you know, the liberal order of things, that we are non-interventionist and anti-Semitic and this and that. And so they know the score. They know what's up. So
because it's illiberal, and that's yes, essentially the problem with Catholicism or traditional Catholicism, is it's illiberal, and this liberal system understands, even if the average person in the pews might still think that you can be pro-America and be a good Catholic, like, sort of. It's a separate discussion for a separate time. But the system understands who their enemies are.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say, you are our enemy, believe them.
I do wish we had more feds that prayed the rosary. You know, that was brought up earlier, but it's like, if we put our faith in our mother, we'd be in a lot better shape. But we do have a little bit more time before we wrap up. I'd like to hear your conversion story before.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My apologies. I'm sorry for the tangent. We'll have to do this again because my conversion story is very long. So I'm going to try to do the abbreviated version. But I kind of already talked a little bit about this early on. You know, I was okay. Where do I begin? Because there's like several different beginning parts of my conversion story, right? Like in a way, you know, you have to go all the way back to my parents. My dad, like I said, he was born in 1952. He was born pre-Vatican II. And all of a sudden, the church changed and left him behind. Like many millions of other white American Catholics, left him behind. So he went off searching for the truth, because if the church doesn't have the truth, then I need to go look for it too. The church is a pilgrim church looking for the truth. Well, then clearly they don't have it. I got to go looking for it. It's very logical. And so when I was born in 1989, my parents were not attending mass anymore. You know, my mom was doing the Protestant thing. My dad just didn't, he couldn't be bothered. He was involved in his career. And so I was never baptized as a child. When I was 7 years old, my dad and I took a little vacation together to Nag's Head on the Outer Banks. We rented a jet ski, and the jet ski flipped over, took on water, and we couldn't get my dad back on top. It kept capsizing. And so we're out in the Atlantic Ocean, getting pulled further and further from shore. A storm is rolling in. It's not a good situation. No one comes out to see us. It's 4 hours have gone by that we're drifting out to sea. I can only see one rooftop at this point. And my dad gets this look of concern on his face. And I decided, if my dad's in the water, I'm going to be in the water. I'm not sitting on this jet ski anymore. So I jump in the water. And my dad starts screaming at me, "What are you doing? Get back on the jet ski. Blah, blah, blah. Are you crazy?" And I said, "Dad, if you're in the water, I'm here with you." And he's like, "Well, do you want to try swimming to shore?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. Let's do it. You know, there's no other way." There's no other way. So we let go of the jet ski. We start trying to swim to shore. And after about 15, 20 minutes, we realize that because of the waves produced by the storm that was rolling in, we had been swimming in a circle. We had gotten nowhere. Except now the jet ski is hundreds of yards away from us. And to swim back to the jet ski would be to swim away from shore. At this point, my dad is not looking okay. He's upset. And I was only seven. I didn't really understand. And I said, "Dad, what do we do now?" And he looks at me and he says, "You need to be baptized." I said, "Okay, how do I get baptized?" And he says, "Well, do you believe in God the Father Almighty?" And I'm like, "Yep." "Do you believe in Jesus Christ, his only son?" "Yes." "Do you believe he was conceived by the Holy Ghost?" "Yes." And on and on. And he brought me through the creed. He reverted back to his catechism class that he took in the first grade, where they taught first graders how to baptize. And he reached down into the water of the Atlantic Ocean, and he baptized me in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And then we tried to swim to shore again, except this time I was straddling him, and he was on his back, and he was using his arms to paddle to shore, and I was keeping an eye on that one rooftop that I could still see. And I'd tell him to swim left or right, and I steered him. 2 hours later, 6 hours into this whole thing, we're finally close enough that my dad can touch sand underneath. Guy pulls up on a jet ski from the rental company and says, "Where's the jet ski?" Not like, "Are you guys okay? What happened? I'm so glad I found you. Where's the jet ski?" "Okay." And so my dad just screams at him and points that way. And we pull ourselves onto shore. And as we're pulling ourselves onto shore, a van of people drives up, and they say that we were in this building. It was the building I could see. They were on the roof with a pair of binoculars, and they had been watching us for the last 2 hours. And they drove out to meet us on the beach, pull us in, and they gave us a ride back. So that's my baptism story. Now, after I got baptized, my parents brought me, we were living in Cleveland, they brought me to the church to receive my first communion, because that's normal. That's what they were taught as kids, right? And so they bring me in. You know, catechism at the Novus Ordo Church consisted of making stick figures with popsicle sticks. And they brought the parents into the sanctuary where a projector screen was lowered over the altar, and the priest started playing a video. The soundtrack was The Circle of Life by Elton John. It was at this point that my dad looked at my mom and said, "Get your son, we're getting out of here." And so for the next, I don't know, 15 years, I never stepped foot in a Catholic church again. Maybe longer than that. I haven't done the math. But I you know, my dad said, I tried. It was a failure. The church is clearly goofy and gay and all of this. We're not going there. So my mom started bringing me around to a Protestant churches, and I started arguing with the Protestant ministers. All right, so I've been saved, right? Yeah, yeah, you've been saved. You were baptized. Okay, cool. Well, if I rob a bank on the way to church on Sunday, I'll see you in heaven, right? No, 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 you can't do that. Well, what do you mean? I've been saved. Don't I go to heaven? And I get in these kinds of arguments. So after a certain period of time, I just came to the conclusion that Christianity was for weak, broken people that, you know, can't do it on their own, which is true, which fundamentally is true, because we're all weak, broken people and we can't do it on our own. We do need God's grace. But anyway, so I grew up a default liberal, you know, went back and forth to public schools and private schools and homeschools. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the liberal propaganda didn't work. We moved around so much. But went to college, Berklee College of Music, music school, and everyone was a drug addict. And so I got into drugs. I started smoking weed. Eventually, I got a chronic pain issue from riding my bicycle too much. The doctors didn't know how to fix it. And they overprescribed me OxyContin. So then I became an Oxy addict. And then, because I was falling asleep because of the drugs that the doctors had put me on, one of my clients at the recording studio gave me cocaine. And I was like, hey, if I do this with that, I don't feel pain and I'm awake. And it led to this downward spiral of addiction and being unable to get clean and feeling guilt and shame and not understanding why, not understanding that bad actions, sinful actions have guilt and consequences, regardless of whether I believe that or not. And so eventually I left Boston thinking that if I just leave the city, I'll get clean. Moved back to Pennsylvania, not knowing how the opioid epidemic had affected Appalachia. And within a week,
Everyone needs to read my friend Trey Garrison Spector's book from Antelope Hill. You can go to the Backlash and get a discount code for Antelope Hill, I believe.
Backlash 10.
Opioids for the Masses. It was a deliberate Jewish plot mm-hmm. by the Sackler family to destroy white Americans.
Yeah.
And I lost family members.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's dude, everybody did.
I know. My best friend's older brother died.
Yeah. So it's this was an ethnic genocide against white people.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
And I pray God, you know, thank God that you got out of it, because I know too many people that didn't.
Well, and so this brings me to the conversion. So I had figured that I can't quit. It's not working. I tried to kill myself by shooting up. And I landed myself in the hospital. My parents found out that I was an addict. This caused my parents to go on a deep soul search, and they found their way back to the Catholic Church because of that. Thank God. And so they started praying for me while I was in rehab. And I went to my first rehab, didn't take. Second rehab, didn't take. All of these Freemasonic, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous nonsense. And in my third rehab, which was a six-month thing at the Salvation Army, I found a rosary hanging on a nail by a dumpster out back where we would smoke cigarettes. And I figured, I've tried Protestant deliverance prayers. I've tried Islam. I've tried, you know, faith healing, and I've tried everything. The only thing I haven't tried is the rosary, is the faith of my fathers, Catholicism. My grandmother prayed the rosary every day till she died. My great, 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 great grandparents in France smuggled priests during the French Revolution. So I knew my family was very Catholic, but that something had happened. So anyway, I took the rosary, I Googled, and I found out how to pray it. I prayed it, and within a week, it was like a Saul on the road to Damascus type thing. Everything in my life changed. I got a home plan. I got out of the rehab. I got a job. I got transportation. And I figured I need to figure out how the Catholic Church self-identifies, because I was still kind of leftist. And that led me to studying all of the ecumenical councils. And I read every single one from Nicaea to Vatican II. And when I got to Vatican II, I recognized that, hey, this is the language of Protestantism and this is the language of communism. What the hell happened in 1965? And so, you know, going back over the catechisms and the councils, honor your father and your mother. That's, you know, one of the Ten Commandments. And so I figured I needed to go and reconcile with my father. He asked me how I was staying clean, and I pulled a rosary out of my pocket. And then my dad, who a man who I'd never seen at church a day in my life growing up, he looked at me, and he put his hand in his pocket, and he pulled out his rosary. And we were both stunned. And, you know, Father's Day was coming up, and I had tried going to Catholic churches, and I'd open the door, and I'd look in, and I'd say, that's Protestant. I'd go outside to check the sign on the church, because clearly I must have misread. It says St. George's Catholic Church, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I open the door to the sanctuary, and I see a Protestant service happening. And I recognized it because I had gone to Protestant churches as a kid. And so for Father's Day, my dad asked me, the present that he wanted was for me to go with him to Mass. And here I'm thinking he's going to one of these goofy Protestant Catholic churches. But whatever, man, honor your father and your mother. And he brought me to the traditional Latin Mass. And it was totally different. It was quiet. It was reverent. They prayed the rosary before Mass began. And then the Mass itself, the old liturgy, it was like seeing the Council of Trent lifted off the page, personified in the priest. And I instantly recognized it as Catholic, having read all of these councils. And so that was it. And so then I started going to Mass every Sunday. And after about a year, I made my general confession on a Ignatian retreat in Connecticut, made my first communion, got confirmed by Bishop Tissier de Malaret. And then, I've had the benefit of, I lived with the priests there in Connecticut for about a year and a half. I got to learn the faith deeply. I discerned the priesthood, the brotherhood, discerned out. And ever since then, I've been extremely blessed. I spent 6 months with Bishop Tissier in close quarters. I was able to quiz him and talk with him, and I met Bishop Williamson several times. I got to work for E. Michael Jones. That's been it. And, you know, I'd be dead if it weren't for the Catholic faith. I don't know what else to say.
That's a crazy story. Wow.
I'm trying to pack it in here.
That's awesome.
No.
I did a big stream with Millennial Woes. It's like a 2-hour-long stream.
Excellent. So. I have to recommend everybody check out Millennial this past year, for in particular Dave's episode. His co-host Cameron also had a great episode, and like Jeff Dice. There were several excellent episodes of Millennial. And I would urge people to listen to Dave's Millennial. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I think that a couple things, right? Obviously, you're a fairly bright guy. Berklee College of Music is, you know, John Mayer went there. It's one of like top five music colleges in the world.
I was in his same dorm room. We had the same dorm. He wasn't there at the same time, but yeah.
Anyway, what the systematic policy, right? This is one of those things that you have to, like, when you actually sit down and think about it, kind of blows your mind, right? The people who were doing this knew that they were killing white people. They knew they were destroying families, because you know, the family member of mine who died, that killed his whole family.
Oh.
You know, you think his mother ever recovered, really? You think his brothers were okay with that? you know, like thousands and thousands and thousands of families were destroyed so the Sacklers could make money. And they knew they were destroying families when they were doing it. And they did it anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like the Sassoons, Jewish drug dealers is a thing that goes back a long, long time. This is not a new thing. And the destruction of lives and the destruction of the church. You know, the man who wrote Nostra Aetate, I wish this was a joke, was a homosexual, bisexual, sodomite Jew who converted and then left the priesthood.
I do think there was a gay guy and then a Mossad agent. It was like a two draftees that were a suspect.
Yeah, and that came out of Cardinal Bea's office, right, with the help of Malachi Martin.
Yeah.
Right, like the destruction of the church as a again, our enemies know that, like, the North Idaho traditional Catholics are their enemies. The North Idaho traditional Catholics need to know that, like, you are the enemies of the system. Yes. That's the biggest problem, is that people who share our religious convictions, you have to understand that the system's against you. It is against your children getting to heaven.
Yes.
The Novus Ordo bishops want your children to be gay apostates. Because when they become gay apostates, do they stop them? Do they do anything? Do they, you know, Bishop Sample's one honorable example against it. But do you think that the Cardinal Archbishop of Los Angeles cares that 85% of his faithful don't know the faith? No, because he's not doing anything about it. So,
and it's also because the mechanisms by which the bishops should look after their faithful, the bishops are themselves like drug addicts, and the United States government is their drug dealer, printing fiat money and filling the coffers on Sunday, as opposed to having a strong, healthy parish with strong, healthy businesses and economic relationships with one another and donating 10% to their churches. Because people don't have the faith and because people aren't doing that, that is no longer the church's primary income. The church's primary income now comes from rehousing refugees and settling foreigners in this country for subsidies. And that's why the bishops don't care. That's one reason why the bishops don't care.
But we need to wrap it up. Thank you, Dave, for coming on.
We'll have to have you back, Dave. Thank you very much for being here.
No, thank you. Sorry, I'm so long-winded. I apologize.
No, that's all right. Please tell people where they can find you and what's your you know. I really enjoy the show, but tell our listeners about The Backlash, please.
Sure. Yeah, we go to our website, thebacklash.net. We're on all platforms except for Spotify. We got banned for dangerous content after we had Father James Maudsley on the show. So you can, like I said, thebacklash.net, Real Backlash on Twitter. My Twitter is @RealDaveRiley. You can get us there. You can find all of our platforms on the website. We do a show on Mondays and Wednesdays. And you know, it's this kind of, I'm a traditional Catholic. My co-host Rebecca, she's more Novus Ordo. And then Cameron he comes from a Protestant family. But you know, the point is getting together and having a place where these different viewpoints can kind of hash things out, have real discussions about what's going on in our country, and find ways to work with one another. Because, you know, and it happens a lot in traditional circles, these Polish firing squads, where we all line up in a circle, aim our guns at each other, and fire. And we engage in infighting, and it is so counterproductive. And so part of the show that we do, The Backlash, is trying to find a way to get people from different perspectives to come together, to talk, to be rational, and to find a way forward. That's what we do.
Awesome. I enjoyed the show as well. From the Fundamental Principle, pray your rosary and revolt against the modern gay world. Thank you, everybody.